Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And today we welcome back Nico Oliveira of the SE8 Gallery in Deptford. And Nico has brought along a guest, David Edward Allen, whose show opened last night, Graft, at the SE8 Gallery. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
David's voice is going to be somewhat quieter because a good night was had last night at the SE8 Gallery with beer and port, apparently.
Yeah.
What do we call this cocktail?
The Deptford Special.
Okay. Is this a made-up drink? Is it made-up just for the occasion, or have you, do you know this recipe?
This was in a bar we found.
Oh, not at the gallery.
No, not at the gallery. This was later in the evening.
It sounds a bit lavish
late
for
evening,
a gallery, actually.
Bad choice.
Okay. So you two go back some way, I think, to the Museum of Installation days, which was in Clerkenwell.
Yes, but David showed with us when we were already established in the Deptford High Street, and he was part of an exhibition entitled Here and Now, curated by Callan Stanley, who is a young media curator who proposed us an exhibition, and David became part of this, and perhaps the rest of the story David can tell us.
This was in 2001, and it was a sound exhibition with four artists. There was myself, Callan Stanley, Wendy Bornholt, and Brandon LaBelle.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And
Were they all sound artists at that time?
They were all sound artists. They were all working with sound.
And, right. Shall I briefly sketch in your CV, such as it appears here?
Yeah.
Shall we do that?
Yeah.
David Edward Allen was born in Suffolk, UK in 1977. Since 1999, he has lived in Berlin, Germany, hence the lack of a Suffolk accent, perhaps. You sound almost German to me.
Yeah, that's what people say when I come back to Britain. And
right.
They tell me I sound German.
Okay.
I have a German accent, but
yeah.
I'm not
but you're
totally
from
convinced,
Suffolk.
But I am, yeah.
Okay.
I can prove it.
His work has been shown at the Museum of Installation, London, the Kunsthaus Baseland, Switzerland, and the Akira Ikeda Gallery and Me Collector's Room, Olbricht Foundation in Berlin. Are you based in Berlin then?
Yes, I'm based in Berlin. I've been there since 1999,
right?
Actually. So.
And what prompted the move to Berlin?
Kind of different things, but in a sense... I always say it was a bad week I had in London.
Oh, but must have been a very bad week.
Yeah, well...
Can you elucidate on that somewhat?
No, it wasn't so bad. It's an exaggeration, but I just finished studying my BA, and...
Where was that?
That was actually with Nikki and Nico at Sir John Cass.
Nikki being Nico's partner in the SE8 Gallery?
Nicola Oxley,
yeah.
Right.
And I just finished the course and was fairly broke as I was during the course, but yeah, especially after the course. Yeah. And I was living in Brick Lane with some Scandinavians who decided that I wasn't up to their standards of housekeeping and asked me to leave.
So. God.
And
how bad was it?
It wasn't. I'm actually pretty tidy, but
right.
they had high standards.
Okay.
And and then the next day, I actually broke up with my girlfriend.
Ah.
And then, yeah, then I was like, okay, this is not a good week for me in London. And I had a friend who was living in Berlin at the time. And I just called him and said, yeah, I need a change. And he was going to Croatia for 6 weeks, so he lent me his apartment. And
mm-hmm.
I just packed a suitcase and just went without a plan. Or
how did
anything.
You travel, by the way?
I flew with British Airways.
Okay.
Yeah. But I missed the plane, actually.
Okay.
By 1 minute or something.
Right.
But, yeah, which wasn't so tragic. I was telling them I have to get on this plane because my whole life is, you know, now going to be in Berlin.
Yeah.
But
so at that time, when you went to Berlin, you thought my life is going to be in Berlin?
Or, well, I knew that I'd kind of ended things here. Like, yeah. I'd sold everything I had, which wasn't much, but I'd, you know, I didn't have anywhere to go back to here in a sense, right. I felt. And but it was no problem. They were like, no, you know, chill out. You can get the next plane. You know, it was British Airways, so you didn't have to worry that in those days.
And so has it been a good move?
Yeah, it has. Yeah. I think really good. I mean, ups and downs, but it's still a very interesting city. And what it's given me, I think, is a lot of kind of space to develop work and ideas and just continue.
Right.
And for a time, you were also working with Wolf Carlin at Ruine der Künste. Was that an influence?
That was maybe in the beginning, that was a good reason for staying, because I worked with him, on his, he was doing a kind of 10-year retrospective of his work. So a very kind of serious, thorough look at all the kind of Fluxus work that he'd been doing and the people he'd been working with, like John Latham and... And so that was, I think that was very good to get there and to get into that kind of position or to have.
Would you have called yourself a sound artist at that time, or was it sort of always mixed media?
It was mostly mixed media. I mean, I was interested in sound, especially at college, but I don't know if I'd ever really call myself a sound artist, because I tend to work with a lot of different media.
Yeah. So what was that piece we started with? That was called Thames Peace.
Yeah.
Which dates from, when does that date from?
That's 2001. That was then the sound exhibition at Museum of Installation. So, I had the room in the basement, which was an old coal room, I think, under the stairs. Really.
Is that Great Suffolk Street?
No. That was actually already in Deptford.
Oh, that was in Deptford?
Given that the Thames was being recorded, which is 5 minutes walk from the gallery.
Yeah.
About 500, 600 metres away, I think.
So it was in the basement of the gallery?
Of the gallery.
In Deptford.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so what I did and what you heard was a hydrophone, underwater microphone I placed into the water, into the Thames. And then I ran a cable to the top of a nearby warehouse. And from there, I sent a radio signal to the gallery, which was then relayed down into the basement via loudspeakers. So at the opening, you could hear the sound live of the underwater sound.
Right.
And that what we heard was an extract, of course.
Right.
And then the rest of the show was a recording. I made longer recordings, and that was replayed then throughout the show. It wasn't like the whole show wasn't live.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't easy, actually, to get... that license and then
did you need a license to do this?
Well, you should. Yeah, you did. I got one.
Okay.
Just
to make that hop, that short.
Yeah,
is that
the
right?
Short distance.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But also because the Thames has such a high tidal change that it's difficult to keep the microphone underwater the whole time. And you could walk along that part of the bank. So
how was it fixed under the water, or was it just sort of suspended?
It's very heavy, so we just, I think, tied it around a plank, the cable, and it sinks. I mean, it's very heavy.
I see. Okay. So it's a waterproof microphone, hydrophone microphone.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing that was particular about that exhibition, hence its title, Here and Now, it actually dealt with this idea of things happening in the present.
Right.
And the time, in the sense of these recordings, is always of the now, or at least there is a discussion with the now, and it asks the question, what is the now? And of course, most importantly, when is the now? Mm. The simple answer to that is now.
Right. But as a recording, once you play a recording, of course, you've lost the nowness, haven't you?
Indeed. And I think this is... but of course, the public does not necessarily know this. So it starts off as something that is absolutely of the moment and then eventually becomes archived. And I think that archival moment is also particularly interesting in terms of this reference, this temporal reference, because in effect, it's a recording of the now that was then.
Yeah.
So there's a relationship between then and now.
Yeah. So it has to start as a live event. to then become. So you would never start with a recorded thing.
Indeed, and I think there's a really nice connection to the piece that David did at the Me Collection in Berlin, whereby he made, and he can probably tell you more about that, but I just wanted to draw the attention to the relationship between the real thing and the model, which is perhaps something that we could talk about a little bit later on. In other words, one thing is an actual installation or a real moment, and the other one might be its representation in another scale, in another way, in another material, and so on and so forth.
Mm.
So, object and image.
Right. Okay. Maybe we should talk about the exhibition now. It started last night at the SEA. Do you want to give us a rundown? Where is the gallery, Nico? You better give us a blast on the air so that people can find it.
Well, we are right on the Deptford High Street, right opposite the lovely Thomas Archer Church, and it's in Deptford by the zebra crossing, and Deptford, of course, being endlessly related to as the new Dalston. I still don't believe it until they finish the building works, which seems like never.
Right, yes, there was something. I read something the other day about the newly discovered Deptford or something being some sort of artistic hub.
It is, because
this isn't a bit of a myth. I mean, it's presumably it's always been sort of.
This has been going on for quite a long time. Mm. However, I think ever since a number of new galleries moved into the area some 2 years ago, the thing has been taking off.
Right.
And now that the station has been finished, they're finishing the plaza and so on and so forth, it's clear that we are seeing all the hallmarks of gentrification.
Ah. So when are you moving out?
Soon.
Surely not. You're established now, aren't you?
Yes. I think the roots go deep. I mean,
okay.
Even though I'm not British, I would almost consider myself, dare I say it, in very large inverted commas, a Deptford boy.
So where are you from, Nico?
I'm from Portugal and from Germany.
Right. Okay. So how did you two got together? Because David was a student of yours. Is that how the liaison began?
I think a number of different reasons. One, yes, of course, the academic question, but also we played football together.
Oh.
And I've never forgotten how he kept kicking my ankles, and I thought, why didn't he just let it be? And we got on famously ever since. And of course, most importantly, it was always the question of the work.
Yeah.
Because if the work's good, the work's good, and that's what we're really interested in.
So your gallery, basically you kind of single out quite rigorous conceptual artists, I would say. Is that fair?
Yes, I would hope so. I think that given that we don't have a program of one show after another, we tend to pick and choose projects as and when we want to make them. It so happens that following Tamarin Norwood's show, we've straight away gone into David's exhibition. Mm-hmm. But that's fairly anomalous. We're always up to something, but not necessarily in the same space, not always in the same country. And sometimes the format may change in that we may be working on a book. And in fact, we're working on a number of monographs at the moment and other forms of writing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's clear that we're not always bound to a specific space, although the space is always there.
Right. And David, do you always you insist on being called David Edward Allen?
I made that change more recently, like a few years ago, because there's quite a few David Allens around.
I was going to say, is that what it is?
Yeah. So, and sometimes it's actually been like an advantage to be mixed up with somebody else, but it's still confusing. So I thought then, well, if I use all of my free names, then it's just there. That's how it is. And
I did a show once where I tried to get people on who all had the same name. In fact, we did two or three.
Yeah.
And the studio manager here was called Richard Thomas. And I got together, I think we had four Richard Thomases in the studio all at the same time, who had never met before, you know. Mm-hmm. Became quite an interesting exchange. Okay, so shall we, do you want to describe this present show, which is called Graft? And what are the opening times of it briefly, Nico? When it's your gallery is quite tight, isn't it?
Yes, we are. It's Fridays and Saturdays, 2 to 6.
Right. Not Sundays?
Not Sundays.
Okay, Friday and Saturday, 2 to 6, at the SEA Gallery, Deptford. And this present show is called Graft. So is this a theme? This is to do with grafting things, or is it to do with work?
Both, in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's the main work, the main piece, well, the main thing that I've been working on the last few years as well, is a piece with four pear trees, and I'm grafting branches from one pear tree onto the other pear tree.
Right.
So, yeah, this word and this process has become something.
So it's four trees.
It's a little bit complicated. It's four trees. It's two different species. So they're all wild pears.
Yeah.
But two of them are European wild pears and two are Asian wild pears.
Right.
And I have put them into two sets of pears, so to speak.
Right. So there's a play on the word pear as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, they also look quite different as trees. I mean, their leaves are different shaped and different colored. The bark is slightly different colored. The European pear has thorns as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah.
And eventually when they start to have fruit, they're still quite young, but when they have fruit, the fruit will look quite different.
Right.
So the European pear has a piriform fruit, like a small, looks like a small pear.
Hmm.
And the Asian has like round, like berries, like cherries.
Okay.
Almost.
So yeah. It's not like it doesn't produce a thing like a conference pear, as we know it, or whatever one gets in the supermarket.
Like a conference pear is a cultivated variety then. So,
have you become an expert on pear trees now? Perhaps you always were, I don't
know. I've been reading a bit about it,
right.
Of course, yeah. And, I like the thing with the cultivated pears. I mean, I specifically looked for wild varieties. So, like the European pear, that's where a lot of these cultivated domestic pears that we know, all the fruits we know, kind of came from.
Yeah.
This wild original.
So you actually you got four trees.
Yeah.
And you've started to graft branches from one tree to the other.
Exactly. I got the trees in 2009.
Yeah.
And they're planted in a piece of land in the south of Berlin at the moment. And in 2010, we made the first graft.
Hmm.
So, and we took like two or three branches from each of the trees and just swapped them over.
Yeah.
And
I have to ask the obvious question, which is why? What possessed you to start trying to supplant branches from one breed to another?
Yeah, I just thought it's a really nice way to make a sculpture. I just thought this is...
But were you trying to improve the shape of an existing tree? Or,
no, not at all. I mean, like I think that's the difference then between perhaps what I'm doing and what traditional gardeners...
Okay.
You know,
right. Yeah.
Or traditional grafting methods. Then they would have a reason, like use or something.
And the reason would be to try and create a better fruit, perhaps.
To have a better fruit or to have a particular kind of fruit, huh? Because you clone then, in a sense. So if you want to keep your conference pears and you don't want them to mutate over time naturally, you have to graft so that you keep, like you do with grapes, you have to keep the original.
Yeah, and that's an accepted part of horticulture.
Yeah, that's a very old tradition.
Yeah.
I mean, that goes back a long, long time to ancient Chinese and Romans.
Would people in the past have sort of, I'd call it interference. I mean, to me, it seems a bit like interfering with nature in a way.
Yeah.
That there is this degree of interfering with what is a natural form. Is it ethical? Is there an ethical question here or not? Or does it not matter? Does nobody care whether things get interbred or altered? Or
I don't know. I mean, I suppose people think that if they get good fruit out of it, then maybe that's a positive thing. I don't know. I mean, for me, none of that was so interesting. I was just very interested in the fact that you could build shapes in a way.
Uh-huh.
Or not particular shapes. I mean, I want the trees to be trees, and I have to follow a lot what the tree trees do. It's not really that I sit down and think, oh, it would be nice to have a branch here or there.
Hmm.
I have to follow, for example, the best branches to graft are the first year growths. So you don't have a like endless choice. You really have what the tree offers you.
Yeah.
And it's quite nice as well to be led by the tree.
Right.
And they don't have, then I want them to look like trees. I mean, they're not going to be shaped.
Would anyone looking at one of these trees, would they know that it was a sort of hybrid?
Yeah, they hopefully, like at first sight, they wouldn't. Right. So hopefully at first sight, they look like a tree. But then when you look closer, then you can see the difference. Because like I said, the bark color, for instance, is a different color. And you see the scars where the tissues grow together. There's normally quite big scars left.
Right.
So, yeah, and the leaves are different colored. And
right.
Yeah.
And so will you create a new, what's the word? Genus, is it, or something? What do you call the variety of a plant?
But you see, I think that this idea of grafting onto rootstocks, just even for pure fertilization, is something that's been happening for millennia in terms of horticulture. And I think this is no different. In fact,
But then what is different about it?
Well, I think this is the area where it actually gets interesting. So his aim is to produce a sculpture. And the sculpture, I think part of its success is that formally it does not actually differ particularly from what a horticulturist would do, only that he's actually doing it within the ambit of art and also with no particular purpose. I think the lack of a purpose is rather interesting because it goes exactly against the aspect of yield, market forces, and so on and so forth. In fact, art has very different market forces from those of the market for pears and trees and supermarkets and so on and so forth, which is something that also turns up to an extent in the harvest piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but just one quick point about the trees, because they, in the sense, they don't look like trees which gardeners would graft, because they graft them for practical reasons, so you can reach the fruit, or maybe they would shape them in a particular, I mean, there's kind of aesthetics that gardeners have as well. And because I worked together with a gardener in the beginning, it was a little bit difficult to make this understood, that I didn't want him to prune branches that he'd normally prune because he'd felt that they were unnecessary or whatever. I want them to have a kind of wildness to them as well. So I would prefer them in the end, and they do now already look more wild. And the thing with pear trees, another reason why I chose pear, because you can do it with any genus. You have to stay normally in the same genus. You can't mix apple and pear or whatever.
You can't?
No.
Ah.
You can't.
Okay.
The strange thing is you can mix quince. You can put pear and apple onto quince.
Oh, yeah.
But that's kind of one of the exceptions. But otherwise, you stay in the same genus and you mix species.
But I think, I mean, supermarkets, I think, in the past, they have tried to create new fruits, haven't they?
They still do. People still do that.
Is it ugly fruit, I think, isn't that one? Or is it, what's the one that's like a cross between an apple and a peach or something? Or there are some.
I thought there was a labradoodle.
Okay. No, but there are these cases of trying to create new fruit. So anyway, perhaps that's a bit of a sidebar. But as it happens, I just remembered seeing something in the paper that there's a, I think one of the oldest trees in Britain is a pear tree. It's 250 years old, and there's some sort of controversy about that they're going to try and take a motorway through it, and it threatens the existence of this tree, which is. I think there's an oak tree which is older, but the pear tree is sort of
perhaps the oldest pear,
possibly.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, that's a bit of a sidetrack. So you in the exhibition you see photographs of the what the development is. It an ongoing sort of.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I say, I started in 2009, and every year basically I draw them and photograph them.
All right.
So the photographs are in the exhibition.
Right.
And the photographs are basically color photographs of the trees, whereby I just black out the background. And they're printed, like, with an inkjet printer.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And so, okay, and this is the occasion, the exhibition is the occasion of a launch of a record, which is related to this pear tree, I think, or has the image of the tree on it.
It does. And the addition is part of something that the gallery does frequently or as much as possible, because we like to produce either editions or publications. They can take different forms. Sometimes they're books. And in this instance, it's actually a limited edition of a vinyl, a clear vinyl with a small booklet inserted, very small run. And we always think that to make editions of books are important in terms of exhibitions, because they actually mark the point of an exhibition. Otherwise, with, for example, where we're coming from, installation art, there is often nothing left. Mm-hmm. And we quite like this idea that there isn't that much left. But I think it's important to mark the occasion through a series of documents. And of course, there are many documents, such as photographs, sound recordings, interviews, and so on and so forth, such as we're doing right now at this moment. But in addition to that, I think it's always really interesting to try and make some kind of physical manifestation in the shape of a publication that does this work.
So in this case, it's, well, you have the publication in front of you, which is a booklet, which comes with this record, which is a 45 RPM single, very beautifully produced, it should be said. Edition of 25 copies. Are they all? They're all signed and numbered by David. Okay. And did you want to read something from the booklet, or is that
We could also play.
Should we play it?
Yeah. Yes.
That's a good idea. Why should we do that? We've actually got the record lined up on a turntable, but we also have it conveniently placed on you. But what's the title of it? Which one is it? I can't remember.
The Pines.
Pines, and it says 6:35, but that's because it's
because it's 6 minutes.
And what is the sound of this then? It can't be the sound of the tree growing.
No.
What have we got? What is the sound? Or should we leave it as a mystery? Or?
No, it's the... you can play it, actually. Maybe it's good just to play it.
All right, we'll play it, and then maybe we can talk about it afterwards. Ah! Dare I say timber? But so what? That is a recording of the there's the 45 RPM single which is being released. Or actually, you're saying you don't want to sell it, Nico. You're hanging on to it. It's launched, but you're sort of clinging on to it at the same time.
Well, we always think that the best way to make additions is to actually try and hang on to as many as you can and release them as needs be to people who really, really want them. Because okay. I think that's kind of important. I think people need to want artworks.
All right. Can we talk briefly about the process there? What's happening on this recording?
Yeah, that's some large pine trees being cut down. It's a recording I made quite a few years ago. And there's also a film. So on the record, there's one tree, basically, on one side, one of the pines, and on the other side, there's a large beech tree that I also recorded being cut down. And all of this was also videoed, so what you can see in the gallery is a combination of the video and the sound, but I've separated them. So you see the image of a beech forest, for example, which we filmed last year in November. And you see this large beech tree standing there for a long time, and you don't see the guy come with the chainsaw, but you see the tree fall, of course, at one point, and empty the space of the screen, the frame which has been filling.
Right.
And then this stops, and you hear the sound actually of the pine trees being cut down, and it alternates between the videos.
Are the two trees together in the forest? Is it three separate recordings?
It's
or?
Three separate recordings from three separate years.
You know, oh, really? So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're going to now play this recording of this is an explosion, isn't it, this one?
Oh, yeah. This is another piece which I did in 2009, and the title is Four Track, and this was yeah, this also was a kind of long-term piece, or it took a long time to realize.
Okay. Should we play the...
Or maybe I have to explain it,
sorry?
I think, first, yeah. Because it's... what I wanted to do was to record the movement of a sound wave and over a kilometer.
Hmm.
So I was interested in the relatively slow movement of sound, that you could perceive it in a sense.
Hmm.
It moves through air at roughly 340 meters per second, and I wanted to kind of capture this movement. So it took a number of years, like I say, to set up the situation where I could make this recording, but I did it eventually in Berlin. There's a an old Soviet airfield in the south of Berlin called Sperrenburg, and it was the Soviet's major airfield during the Cold War and that period, and then it became abandoned in the 90s when they left. And when I used it, I worked then with the, or I got in contact with the German government, who test explosive, and they made an explosion for me, which I could record on this airstrip. So,
what do they explode exactly?
It was dynamite, or
right.
plastic explosive.
Yeah,
I mean, they test everything. It's like a department for testing materials,
right.
And one material that they have to test is explosive.
Yeah.
So,
and was there? You were interested in the sine wave, in the sound wave.
I was interested, in capturing.
So, could it have been anything? I mean,
it could have been anything, but I needed a fairly short sound,
right.
And a very loud sound.
Right. So, would a pistol shot have done the same thing?
It would have probably done the same thing, but the explosion was louder.
Uh-huh.
So,
right.
That was what I was going for.
Yeah. And does it explode? Any, do you blow something up, or is it just an explosion in air?
It's just a stick of... It looks like a stick of dynamite.
Really?
Yeah. And it's just on the runway.
Right.
And wired up, and then they explode it. Yeah.
So it's not what... You don't sort of...
You don't,
not
no,
like in a cartoon where you light a fuse.
Of a match.
And then step backwards. Okay. Right.
Yeah. And
So that's very obliging of them. They're quite...
I had to pay them, of course.
Did you? Oh, yeah.
But they were still kind
was it
of
expensive?
Open to, they get paid well, as you can imagine.
Really?
When you work with dynamite, you get a good wage, I think.
Yeah.
But
Right.
But how do you record a sound wave like that?
Yeah. Well, we did it. We I used four microphones spaced out over a line over a kilometer. So the first mic was about 60 meters, I think, from the explosive. And then every 333 meters came the next mic.
Right.
And all the mics were cabled up to a field recorder, a four-channel field recorder.
Was it exploded in open air, so the sound would have gone in all directions?
Exactly.
Or it wasn't channeled?
Channeled.
Okay.
So, yeah. And at one point I was thinking of doing this recording on a salt lake, because I didn't want to have any echoes. Or I was thinking, like, the piece sounds like an echo, but it's not echoes. It's the original wave as it moves over the mic. So
right.
This was kind of going to be a test for that. But in the end, it turned out, actually, I liked very much the reflections. There was forest each side of the airstrip. So the echoes became very distinctive and characteristic.
And do you play this as a loop in galleries?
Exactly. I played
should we play it two or three times or not?
A couple of times.
A couple of times.
Because it's very short. It takes less than 3 seconds.
So, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So obviously that was three times. But it does have a... It has a sort of ripple, doesn't it? It's like a resonance. What is happening?
I think it's playing something else.
Playing something else. Mysterious aftershock. Mm. So
the reflections kind of build up.
Is that because each microphone is picking it up?
Yeah. No, they're picking up more and more reflections as the sound moves along.
Right. Okay.
So they kind of build, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So at the end, it decays very slowly, yeah.
Yeah. But one of your other pieces, which I noticed, is called Cyclops, which is crossbow bolts shot with a crossbow. I mean, this sort of, these things seem to sort of, it was cutting down of the trees and so on. There is a sort of an auto-destructive element running through the work, I think.
Maybe. I don't know. I was... also thinking about this, but it's something to do, I think, with an event like this moment when a shot or an explosion happens, or a tree gets felled. Yeah. It's a very unique moment, and I think that's quite interesting. And especially with four track, I was interested in repeating this moment four times, and that's what you get. You hear the same event four times.
But how did you show that?
That was then showed in a gallery in Berlin, which the problem was that when I played the sound into the gallery, it started to get echoes from the space. Mm-hmm. So we ended up building an anechoic chamber to play the sound in. So this was like a small room which we built ourselves, like handmade with like over 2,000 wedges covered in linen. It was kind of the chamber itself was based on the chamber that Cage visited in Harvard, the famous one.
Oh, huge. To try and create silence.
Yeah, or he visited, and this, I don't know when, but he made this quote at that point about hearing his blood.
You still hear your own body in some way.
Exactly,
a heart or blood pulsing or something. So,
and that was an anechoic chamber built by Leo Baranek, was a scientist after the war at Harvard.
Right.
And it's very beautiful chamber, but it was destroyed a few years after it was built. And so I kind of wanted to make ours look a little bit like that one. And we had it was a room then full of these wedges, the ceilings, the floor, everything, with a speaker at the end, which just basically looped the recording back into, and it worked so that you could concentrate on the sound. You didn't get reflections, and
okay. What else should we play? Do you want to play another sound? Should we play another one of these of the sounds you've brought in, or Nico, is there something else we should cover before we?
No, I think we should just play the German piece,
which is which is that one.
That's a project or a piece I did in 2006. It's
Is that called One Square Mile?
Yeah, that's the one. And
yes. So you could maybe describe this. It's to do with emergency services or something?
Yeah, I used then just this scanner radio for like picking up the police and the ambulance radio communication.
Right.
Because in Germany it's, then it was still analog. Most places have changed to digital, but there it was analog for a long time. And I played this sound back into the gallery space for a weekend. Also had it transcribed simultaneously, like onto a screen, so you could read it. And again, I was interested in a way similar to the Thames piece in this connection of different spaces, different points. And so basically this is just part of the recording of that live performance.
Okay. You've been listening or still listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM, and today's guest is David Edward Allen, whose show Graft runs at SE8 Gallery in Deptford, which is on Deptford High Street. And Nico Oliveira is here. You and your partner Nicola Oxley run the gallery. And the exhibition is on, it runs on Fridays and Saturdays. Is that right?
Two to six.
2 to 6, Friday and Saturday. So, let's play. Should we play the whole of this piece, do you think? This next one?
We can try.
We could do that, and then that will probably leave us possibly a couple of minutes at the end to sort of round up, should we need it. This is called One Square Mile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gut, mal die Strecke abfahren und dann die Örtlichkeiten durchgeben, wo sie was entdeckt haben.
Ja, so richtig. Zum Beispiel Einliegenbleiber haben wir die ehemalige Bushaltestelle bzw. Bushaltestelle Höhe Saatwinkler Damm. Ja, und Richtung Süden habe ich schon diverse gesehen. Also ich glaube, die stellen sich auch einfach nur unter aufgrund des Tages hier.
Ja, die ehemalige Bushaltestelle ist roter VW, ja.
Na, die dann vor Saatwinkler Damm, kurz vor der Ausfahrt Saatwinkler Damm.
Ja, verstanden. Wie gesagt, die Strecke abfahren und die Örtlichkeiten mal durchgehen für uns, ne?
Und wie gesagt, also man hat ja auch kaum Sicht und deswegen halten die Leute scheinbar hier einfach nur rechts auf den Standstreifen an.
Verstanden.
Ja, war uns der rote VW, das ist die Bushaltestelle Görtladamm. Schönen guten Abend.
Ja, steht da gut. Guten Abend. Haben wir auf dem Monitor. Schönen Dank.
Die Heimatkräfte sind sich da nicht ganz einig. Die wollen, wenn sie jetzt eine Gruppe haben, beziehungsweise Unterstützung durch Uniform. 403.
So Camino 26.
Oder 28. Das muss eine Frau Kestin sein, im zweiten oder dritten Obergeschoss. Häusliche Gewalt, die wird wohl vom Mann im Bad geschlagen. Ging um drei Ecken. Genaue Adresse konnte nicht genannt werden.
Ja, wir suchen
das. Für Sie die Sonder und Ehre, ich gefreie Ihnen.
Verhängen.
Verkehrslage 100 Süd.
Wunderbar, Verkehrsstufe 2.
Gut, also brauchen wir auch keine Verkehrslagemeldung dementsprechend, ne?
Nee, wie gesagt, Richtung Norden. Also da finde ich, dass die Ruder derselbe sein, wie lange haben wir denn umzuschauen.
Ja, verstanden. Alles klar.
Das müssen wir nochmal machen, das habe ich ja nicht aufgeschrieben. Fangen wir nochmal an. 355 oder?
DW 17 1 von vorher in Berlin kommen.
11 und die 5. Und das Ganze wurde angelegt durch den Abschnitt 27.
Seestraße 116 bei Herrn Geister, richtig?
Ja, wie die Geister, die man rief. Und wie gesagt, da schauen, ob man da irgendwas sieht, rauswickeln. Feuerwehr kommt ebenfalls und für die Sonder die Ehre zu frei.
Ja, Sonder und D-Recht auf eigene Verantwortung. Aber aufgrund der Witterungsverhältnisse sind wir natürlich nicht ganz so schnell.
6 Uhr, dann ist mir klar, hier geht es ja auch hier so Land unter.
Ja, erstmal mit.
Haben wir bei uns auf dem Fahrzeug kommen?
Verstanden.
Ja, verstanden, danke. Das müsste so, sieht aus wie so eine Stadtvilla.
LFA 52 von Florian Berlin kommen.
Ramazan, Richard, Anton, Martha, Anton, Zeppelin, Anton, Nordpol. 01-01-74 Türkei geboren.
BC Straße 140.
Name Dirk. Buchstabiere Dora Ulrich Richard Cäsar. Vorname Gülistan. Gustav Übel Ludwig Ida Sam Theodor Anton Nordpol. 24-11-79 Türkei geboren.
100.
Einmal VU, Europaplatz, bitte mal zufällig abverständigen. Ohne Personenschaden.
Ohne Personenschaden. Vogel 500.
Ja, ohne Personenschaden.
Ja, wer ist der Melder?
Die 501.
Ja, mit.
Das ist Schreiberer, kommen. Alarm Geburtshilfe. Alarm Geburtshilfe Brunnenstraße 111a. Brunnenstraße 111a. Gesundbrunnen. Vorn, fünftes Obergeschoss bei Polat. Vorn, fünftes OG Polat. Einsatznummer 790 790 um 20.13 Uhr mit Quittung kommt.
Die von aus 2015 Betriebsende offiziell.
Okay, well, that was that's called One Square Mile, and that was broadcast live at the opening of your show then?
Yeah, that was live over a weekend.
Right, and so there would have been a certain question of the legality of doing, because you were literally tuning in to emergency messages.
Yeah, which, it's a little bit vague, the legality, like you can tune in because you can get these scanning devices pretty easily, but you can't publish it, so what I was doing, I suppose, was publishing it, and that's the problem. I mean, it's all privacy rights as well, so all the names and addresses that you hear, I mean, those people would have a issue,
right,
of course. If
And you were saying that that there are all these, you get snippets of stories, there's never a complete story,
yeah,
as such,
exactly.
You're just getting a kind,
yeah,
of an ellipse or
part
something.
Of it, yeah, because the machine works that it scans through all the different frequencies, and it chooses ones which are live, so if the communication, I mean, there'll be a call from maybe the control to some car, police car or whatever, and after this conversation is finished, then it scans to another completely different frequency which is being used. So you get this kind of strange mix, strange cut-up effect.
And the scanner is just programmed to it just scans
randomly. It just scans
randomly
and looks for the frequency that it can find, which is live,
right,
quickest, yeah.
Nico, you just wanted to quickly describe this exhibition in Berlin that David was a part of.
Yes, it was an exhibition that was called A Book of Burning Matches, Collecting Installation Art Documents at the Mie Collection, Thomas Albrecht Foundation, which is a museum in Berlin, in Auguststrasse. And one of the works in this exhibition was the scale model, the version which was made after the large anechoic chamber that we were talking about earlier on. So here, the document that relates to an earlier piece is that scale model, and that's usually the reverse way from the way that one tends to work. Usually you make it first, and then you build the large piece. This was in reverse, and it was in response to the question of the archive. And so, in a sense, what David made was a new piece, but that was specifically in response to something that he had made earlier.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you both very much for coming in. That's David Edward Allen and Nico Oliveira for Graft, David Edward Allen's show, which is running at the SE8 Gallery in Deptford, Fridays and Saturdays. Perhaps we should end with a small piece. What's Beach Video, David?
That's beach trees being cut down. That's
beach
very nice.
Beach trees. Okay. Yeah. We can just run out with that, I think.
That's good. Yeah.
All right.